Hello, I'm Eric Corman, Communications Director at League of Education Voters. In this podcast, we interview policymakers, partners, and thought leaders to spotlight education policies, research, and practices so that together we can create a brighter future for every Washington student. Denise Juneau leads Washington State's largest K-12 school district, a vibrant and diverse community of over 53,000 scholars. In April 2018, the Seattle School Board unanimously selected her to lead the district after an extensive search. Denise has spent her adult life ensuring that young people have access to a quality education that can open the doors to a better future. Her work in public schools and leading Montana's state education agency meant increased opportunities for students and a collective boost to the state's economy. Denise is an enrolled member of the Mandan Hidatsa tribes, a descendant of the Blackfeet tribe and the Tlingit and Haida tribes. In 2008, she became the first American Indian woman in the country ever elected to an executive statewide office. In 2012, she was re-elected to a second term as Montana's Superintendent of Public Instruction. As Montana's Superintendent of Public Instruction, Denise launched an unprecedented effort to make sure all Montana students who graduate from high school are prepared for college or careers. She developed a statewide initiative, Graduation Matters Montana, which made a positive difference in more than 50 communities. Graduation Matters Montana brought school, business leaders, community members, students, and families together to work toward a common goal, that every student graduate from high school ready to succeed. In just a few years, the state's graduation rate increased to its highest level ever recorded. In her tenure as superintendent, Denise raised academic standards, expanded college and career readiness opportunities, and advocated for policies to improve the quality of education in the state and nation. Denise Juneau became superintendent of Seattle Public Schools on July 1st, 2018. I know this is a little bit late, but congratulations.
Thank you. It's great to be here. I'm loving my new city and the district and just everything that's going on.
That's fantastic. Yeah. And one of the things that you did that I thought was very impressive was going around the district on a listening tour.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really curious, what did you hear and what did you take away?
So it's really important for me when I'm stepping into a new place to really learn what's going on. You know, I'm new to Seattle, so I started a listening and learning tour, and I stopped at 19 different community meetings, some home language meetings, you know, had communities of color invite me into their spaces so that I could hear the challenges of Seattle Public Schools, but also some successes. So it was great, and I met with every department within the central administration as well to hear what staff were thinking. I've been out in schools, been meeting with partners, just a lot of listening. And one of the things that drew me to Seattle to start with was this idea that people were focusing on racial equity within the education system. And I think that's just really important. It's good to have Seattle having those conversations. And that continued throughout the listening and learning. So people were really talking a lot about how are we going to make sure that we are closing gaps? How are we going to make sure that we are inviting families and truly engaging them in the process, particularly those that are historically underserved or communities of color? You know, it's been sort of my goal to build a longer table and let's bring more voices so that they can have input into the system. So racial equity was big. People in the community also want more consistency and predictability from the district.
Mm.
You know, issues like transportation, which is the top of my mind to fix this year, enrollment, boundary changes. And so all those things around operations of the district, that they just would like to have more predictability around those systems. So we need to do a better job of building those. Special education services. The district's done a lot of great work of getting out of some compliance issues and are now compliant with the federal government and all those, but it's like the lived experience of special education families, highly capable families, that we really need to bring people together and have conversations around what those look like, how can the district do better to provide services. And so it was just a lot of different types of issues. You know, I also met with some student groups, and so mm-hmm. that was really interesting about what is their experience in schools. I think that's really important to get their voices at the table. They are the end users of our system, and I want to make sure that they are successful. So a lot of listening and learning. I'm ready to make the pivot. All of the information we gathered will form the basis for the strategic plan going forward. And so we're in that process of planning, taking all these voices. We'll vet them again with the communities that we visited with to make sure that what is in the plan is authentic to what they were saying, and so that we can start moving forward.
It's interesting you talk to students. Yeah. Was what they said different or the same from what you heard from communities?
Well, I think there were a lot of similarities, but their experiences, and particularly from students of color, they want to see themselves reflected in school more. They want to see it reflected in books they read, in the curriculum that they're accessing, and they want to see teachers who look like them standing in front of the classroom. And so a lot of those types of conversations, when you visit with young people, they're like so smart and they are just really engaged. And here in Seattle, they are very aware of their surroundings, of society, of justice. And so it is really awesome to visit with them because they have that sense of equity and equality that they want to work towards, and they want the district to reflect that. And so, you know, they are really going to help hold me accountable to those issues and to the values and how we need to live the values that they want to see in their education system.
Is that why you formed a student advisory board? Because that's really exciting.
Yeah.
To bring students into the actual decision-making process.
Right.
Could you tell me a little bit more about that, how it works, what kinds of influence the student advisory board will have?
Sure. So when I was in my previous role as state superintendent, I had a statewide student advisory board, and it was just really fascinating to sit down with them a couple, three times a year and have conversations about what was going on. Like, they have a lot of great ideas about what should be happening. And so, you know, we were very intentional about choosing who's on the student advisory board. We had valedictorians of their class. We had students who had dropped out of school and dropped back in. We had students who were privileged. We had students who struggled to get to school every day. And so the diverse voices and the stuff that they learned from each other was super powerful, that when they left, that they could see each other and know each other, and was important for them moving forward. But some of the things that I learned, because it was focused on my initiative, Graduation Matters in Montana, we talked a lot about why students didn't feel engaged, why they might be dropping out. And when we talked about career in college, we talked about bullying in schools, all kinds of issues. But some of the things with all of my conversations, there were always similar themes that came out. And it was about relationships. Every student needs someone in their corner that's going to challenge them and support them and hold them accountable. They need relevance of their learning. They need to know that what they are learning in class is going to help them with their goals and their dreams, and they want it to be real and meaningful to them. And then also this idea of rules, right? That they know rules have to exist, but they want them applied fairly. You know, one example that he always brought up, there used to be this 10-day attendance policy. And if you miss more than 10 days in class, students would fail that class.
Yeah.
And so they said, but you could belong to drama and band and chorus and be out of class 30, 40 days, and you get to pass, when a student who may be struggling to get to class every day would fail that class. And so that sense of justice and the sense of equity, they see it very clearly. And so they were really helpful in trying to help us figure out policies. I see that same sort of effort coming from the student advisory board here as well, to really dig into what does racial equity mean to students in this system. How do we make sure that our policies are doing the job that they're intended to do, or did we miscalculate somewhere and may have to adjust? And so I just want to really make sure that what we're doing at the district level resonates with their lived experience as they work their way through the education system.
At League of Education Voters, we put students first, and so to see you doing the same thing is just fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, all of the things that we have to have conversations around in the system now need to be around the student. We are going to be student-centered. You know, adults need to participate in the system, but it's not about the adult issues. We need to really dig in. And what I see in the district right now is, like, I like to follow data as well, and I like to see the numbers. And I do think that when we focus in on academics, we can see the gaps. We know where we need to move, and we really need to get real about that direction and making sure that we're pulling partners in that can help us really move the needle.
And with the student advisory board, will they be part of your cabinet, or will they advise the school board? How exactly does that work?
Well, I think they'll advise me.
Okay.
And so It's a student advisory board to the superintendent. Mm-hmm. And so we'll be bringing up different issues, you know, as we're thinking about rolling out different initiatives, maybe looking at the strategic plan and making sure they see themselves reflected in that. Mm-hmm. And so just looking at some of the big things that the district is thinking about and getting their input and making sure that it's real, mm-hmm. and that it's going to make a difference. They just have great ideas, and they are thinking of things that we're not thinking about. We had a student-centered focus in Montana when I was working with schools that were struggling, mm-hmm. and they helped design rules for the school. They decided how culture was going to be included in the school system. And one lesson that I always talk about is we sat students down in these communities of high poverty, struggling schools, and we swooped in as adults and was like, okay, we need great curriculum, we need these kind of books, we need all these types of things. And then we sat down with students. We said, what do you need from your education system? Or what do you need from your community? And they said, we want sidewalks.
Ah.
We want safe places to walk. And nowhere on our radar was that issue, nowhere. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's really the strength that they bring to us as decision and policymakers is those things we're not thinking about, and the things that we think might be real and make a difference is not what they need, right? And so I'm looking forward to having those types of conversations about what do they need from our education system? How can we as the adults in the system make sure that we're meeting their needs so that they can be successful?
You mentioned a lot of things that you like to see in the district, mm-hmm. Teachers that reflect the student mm-hmm. populations, closing gaps. Mm-hmm. How are you measuring success, or how do you expect to measure success in the district to the things that you want to accomplish, at yeah. least in the near term?
Yeah, so you know, I'm gonna close out my engagement plan, starting that out. I need to complete the strategic plan moving forward, and so I have a few big things that I need to complete. We have a levy coming up in February that
yes.
helps us with the operations of our district and building great spaces for students to learn, and so that will be part of our effort in educating the community about what that means to our district. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, looking at data and figuring out where we really need to move the needle. By nature, I'm an impatient person. Mm-hmm. I really want to get some things done. Being new to the community, I really needed to be patient and sit back a bit and really learn. But now mm-hmm. that we're there and we have the strategic plan, we really do need to move the needle on academic achievement. We are a high-performing district across the country, and people look to us for particularly the racial equity work we're doing in the district. But there are gaps that we need to fill, and
yes.
we need to not be afraid to take on those challenges and have real conversations about them, about how does equity look in our system and how are we going to really achieve those goals.
Yeah, equity is one of our huge values at League of Education Voters.
Yep.
And full disclosure here, I'm a parent of a Seattle Public mm-hmm. School student in fourth grade who is a student of color, and he is on a special education plan, mm-hmm. an IEP. So I'm really curious about closing gaps, and
yep.
it's very important, obviously, but how would you like to address closing those, because mm-hmm. it's hard. I'll
right.
just put it out
yeah.
there. It's not easy.
No, it's not.
Yeah, how do you want to do that?
So I think we need to become laser focused. We need to name it, and we need to build initiatives around it. And then we have over 300 partners that work with the district, and we need to really pull them together. It's like, this is where we're going. Because when I look at the data, it's unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And we really need to make sure that we are focusing, and we have a laser focus, say, on African American male achievement. And we need to get real about that conversation. We need to build initiative around it. And then we need to build our partners, like, this is where we're going, and you can come with us and help us. But we can't do it alone. We need our partners at the city. We need our partners out in the community to provide mentorship programs or to make sure our family support workers are in our schools, and just to make sure that everybody's pulling in the same direction. And so that's where I need this district to get. That's where I need our community to come along with us.
We'll support you any
yes,
way we can.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it's going to be great. And just like, you know, it's often said that this is what education is about. I had a conversation this morning. It's like, I am who I am because of public education and what it brought to my family's life, to my life, to my brother's. We know that if you are going to be successful in our community, in our state, in our country, you need to be educated. And so for us to be failing on certain issues, we need to get real and have hard conversations and move this district forward.
And that leads into my next question, mm-hmm. which is, what was your education journey? Mm-hmm. How did you get to where you are today?
Right.
And honestly, what worked and what didn't?
Yeah. So, I mean, I often say my story takes me from Head Start to Harvard, from growing up on the Blackfeet Indian Reservation to now leading a high-performing urban district. And how awesome is that story? My family were educators. My grandmother was a school cook for 28 years. My grandfather was a bus driver and a school attendance officer. My father was a administrator. He ended up being a superintendent of two different districts. My mother started our first alternative school in our town. And so just a rich history of involvement in public education. And then this second part of public service. My dad was on the school board after he retired. My mom was a state legislator. Watching them start working in the realm of where politics and policy intersect mm-hmm. was just really fascinating to me. And so, you know, I started out as a paraprofessional in the system. I became a classroom teacher, eventually served at, and got elected as the state superintendent for Montana and served 8 years there, where we did some really phenomenal things. Graduation rates rose to historic highs for 2 years in a row. We were able to do some really good work on schools of promise and struggling schools and really move the needle on some student achievement issues. But that does not happen with just the public education system itself. I learned that you need to be steeped in community. You need to have your partners really help you with all those issues. And so we'll just talk about some of the work we did with our struggling schools. It was a mixed bag. Mm-hmm. You know, we were successful in some areas. We're really raising achievements. Some schools made AYP for the first time. Some schools had very high graduation rates, and some schools were not successful. And so, but it's learning the lessons. And one thing I learned from that work is, as a state agency and now as a district, we need to really become more nimble in the support services that we offer. We need to be able to adjust when things aren't working. We need to be able to work with our partners to pull them in. It's like, you need to help us in these areas. We need to be not afraid to ask for help. And we need to, yeah, really be able to work around and make sure that we're providing our resources in the right areas.
So in your case, what are some things that worked really well for mm-hmm. you, and what are some things that didn't?
Yeah, well, pulling community in was very helpful. Oh, for myself personally?
For you, your own personal education journey, yeah.
Well, I think it was the people that I got to watch and observe. My mom, I talk about a lot, but watching her rise up on the state house floor and speak truth to power, I mean, she was fierce in her advocacy. And to know and to learn that there are a lot of communities that aren't at the table, who don't have a voice because they don't know how to navigate the system, and that they need those types of champions sitting in seats of power, and that representation matters. Who sits in the seats of power matters. And so for me, those are really good lessons to watch, particularly American Indian women rise and be in those positions was really influential for me. Some of the things that didn't work, you know, learning from failure. You know, I ran a failed congressional race, but I'm still proud that we did it because we did everything we were supposed to. We inspired a lot of people. And that's where I learned the responsibility you have when you sit in these seats. I would travel out to different communities on reservations and young women, you know, who could see themselves reflected in our political process or sitting in leadership roles was really powerful. And when they would come up and say, like, how do I become like you? You realize the responsibility you have to young people. And I think that's just a really good point to remember as we work through all these processes, that several things, that you need people who don't have a voice. You need to provide that opportunity for them to be in the room. And that we need to be role models. We have to realize that we need to lead with integrity, and we need to be true to our core values, and we need to live those values.
Denise Juneau is the superintendent of Seattle Public Schools. Denise, thank you so much for letting me drop by.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening. To learn more about League of Education Voters or to support our work, please visit educationvoters.org.